Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I thought maybe I'll just sit down and let you play that tape that you got.
I've got one with me.
I don't know how you are, but every once in a while, the devil just gets into me a little bit, and I'm one of those type of people who believes if you're at an AA meeting, you ought to be in the room. So I made a suggestion to the committee, and they didn't like it. Of course, they don't ever like any of my suggestions. Anyhow, I told them, to the people in the smoking room, we can just turn off the video and play one of my old tapes for you. Just John would make that announcement, so he told me to make it. But I am. I'm glad to be here tonight, and I don't know where you are or who's supposed to get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm glad I don't know that. I'm glad I don't know who's supposed to hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous and who isn't, because if I had some kind of an idea who was supposed to hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd probably study up on it and screw us both up. But that's the way I am. I'm glad and thankful to the committee for allowing Debbie and I to come here and to share our experience, strength, and hope with you. I have always considered it some type of a privilege to be allowed to attend AA meetings. I have never been able to get it through my head since I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous that I have a right to be here just because I don't drink alcohol anymore. I don't think it's a right. I think it's a privilege to be allowed to sit with you good people, because there's nothing I ever did in my life before the fourth day of November 1959 when I came to my first meeting to this moment. Nothing I did in my life before that day ever entitled me in the slightest idea of my head that I had a right to come and sit with people such as you. Nothing. And I still sometimes am feel overwhelmed by it, because I never have the right or have never had the idea in my head that I deserve the good life that's been mine. Because I'm a firm believer if I got what I deserved, it'd be, well, you better clear the room, I'll tell you that. But I didn't do anything, and I'm glad to be here. So I want to thank you for that. I want to talk to the newcomer in this room tonight and tell you I hope the word being sober doesn't offend you as bad as it offended me when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. See, when I said in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and you good people talked to me about being sober, I didn't think Alcoholics Anonymous had anything to offer me. And the reason I didn't think that is because I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. As physically sober. But you see, that had always seemed to be my problem. If I could have stayed loaded forever, I'd have never came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I kept getting interrupted out there on my happy road of destiny. But then people in those little black and white cars, isn't it amazing how everybody's trying to help us today? You know, I mean, everybody, as long as we've got insurance policies, they try to help us. And they always invent new things to help us with. So they think they're new. They got a big deal out in my part of the world called intervention. It's a big deal. I want you to know that the Los Angeles County Sheriff knew about intervention in 1940. And I'll tell you, if you live the way I live, they'll intervene in your life, too. You don't have to worry about your mama sitting you down and talking to you about your drinking. They'll intervene in your life. So there ain't nothing new that happens here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't heard anything new in Alcoholics Anonymous for over 31 years. Not a thing. But I hope if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight that you stay here long enough to come to understand what we of Alcoholics Anonymous mean when we talk to you about being sober. You see, I think about being sober a lot, and when I come to think about being sober today, the idea that there's no alcohol or chemicals floating around in my system doesn't even enter into the picture anymore. Sobriety is the way I live. I lived a certain way for a long period of time, and for a long period of time, I didn't stay sober. I didn't stay out of trouble. I have lived an entirely different way for an equally long period of time, and all that period of time, it hadn't been necessary for me to drink anything, swallow anything, smoke anything, or stick anything in my arm, and for that, I'm extremely grateful. Now, I'm extremely pleased to be here tonight, fully clothed and in my right mind. And I don't tell you that for any particular reason other than the fact that the longer I stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more necessary it becomes for me to remember from whence I came. It isn't necessary for you to remember that. It's necessary for me to remember it. And I never want to forget that a little over 34 years ago tonight, I was crawling around on my knees in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary barking at the moon. Now, because of a loving God as he expressed himself through this program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and knees like an animal. If I get nothing else out of this deal, I could live that for a long time. It makes me feel good. Know that. I'd like to be able to stand here tonight without any doubt in my mind whatsoever and tell you that's where demon alcohol took me to. Devil drugs. That's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol and drugs did in my life kept me alive long enough to find Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all. I'm as sure as I'm standing here without alcohol working in my life, I'd have blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I have always been an emotional misfit. Always. As far back as I could ever possibly remember, I didn't want to be who I was, where I was, and who I was with. I always wanted to be somewhere else, doing something else, with somebody else. I didn't like nothing or nobody anytime. And I don't know where that came from. Just seemed to be there all the time. I knew as much about what whiskey would do to people when I was 6 years old as I know tonight. Just as much. I sat around with a ringside seat watching whiskey destroy people. I watched my uncle drink whiskey and go to penitentiaries. My aunts drink whiskey and work in those houses on the other side of the tracks. I saw Mom drink whiskey and beat up Dad. Dad drink whiskey and beat up Mom. They both drink whiskey and beat me up. I saw what whiskey did to people. And I said, I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to be like them. I'm going to be better than they are. I'm going to step out into that world, have something, and do something, and be something. One day, sitting on the back porch of my grandpa's house when I was a little boy, just as natural as me breathing in and out, I reached down underneath that porch and took out his jug and took a drink. I just did it. And I don't know why I did it, but I just did it. It was just as natural for me as breathing in and out. And in that instant of my life, when that stuff went down inside of me, in that instant of my life, I sold myself into bondage for the next 20 years of my life. Not to alcohol, or later to the drugs that came into my life, but there was a feeling that happened to me when I drank alcohol. A feeling. Something went down inside of me. Something went down here and stilled the screaming madness. It took me from the black pit of nothingness, stood me into the gray fringes of the business of living. It installed in me some type of arrogance. It said, damn you, world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here. That's what alcohol did for me. Man, if alcohol still did that, I'd still drink it. That stuff is wonderful when it happens to you. Reed, I don't drink alcohol or use drugs anymore. They don't work. The sad part about my life is they quit working 10 years before I knew they did. I spent the last 10 years of my life running around out there trying to find the answer into a hypodermic needle 10 years after it quit working. And I'll tell you something. If hell is any hotter than that, I hope I don't ever get there. I don't ever want to live in that type of hell ever again. Running around trying to find the answer and it ain't there no more. When I ain't got no answer. And I've always needed an answer. See, I look back on that thing, that moment of sitting on my grandpa's thing back there after many years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous, after listening to many inventories, after listening, doing many things in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've come to understand that I am an alcoholic. Not because I got drunk and went to the reform school. I had some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. Not a bad reaction, just some type of an abnormal reaction. It triggered something inside of me that the doctor says is a phenomenon of craving. That it's only limited to people like me. Everybody who drinks doesn't have this little gadget, whatever it is, that drives them wacko. I took this drink of alcohol, and for the next 20 years of my life, every time I took a drink, the same thing happened to me. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, they pulled me out from underneath a bridge, stood me in front of a judge, and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol, they pulled me out of a car in Compton, and stood me in front of a judge, and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. That's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I just traveled around out there. I went from reform school, to junior penitentiaries, to nut houses. Nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I kind of like nut house. You get a little more mileage out of nut house than treatment center. Well, I'll tell you how I think about it. When I was a kid in my neighborhood, we used to stand around on the street corner and pass the jug around. We were all hip, slick, keen, and cool. We were in bad neighborhoods, so we acted bad, smelled bad, talked bad, and acted bad. We did all kinds of stuff. We lied to one another. Whoever told the biggest lie was the biggest liar. We just had big deals going on there. And I remember one time we were passing a jug around. I was on one of these places and looked over and somebody says, "There's Joe. Joe just came out of San Quentin." We went, "Oh, Joe." Joe was something to shoot for. I mean, Joe was a big man, San Quentin. Can you imagine now? Really, how about it? Stand on a street corner, you're passing a jug around. Somebody says, "There's Richard. He just did 30 days in the care unit." Not my neighborhood. That house. Boy, you like that, huh? Isn't it amazing? They even got this wacko factory out here in Springfield, this federal wacko factory called the Med Unit. Boy, they're kind of locked up for a medical unit, I'll tell you that out there. But it worked, that's all I can tell you. I'm sitting on this street corner on a furlough from a reform school. I'm 10 or 11 years old. I'm drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine, which was my drink. Most of you have never heard of Marco Petri red wine. The reason for that is it was the experimental stage of the Thunderbird. That's how bad it was. I tell you, I never saw a grape. That's how bad it was. I tell you, I'm sitting there drinking this stuff, and I don't know whether it's doing what it's supposed to be doing or what it's not doing what it's supposed to be doing. I know it ain't doing enough. You know, my wife, my lovely wife, talked about more. This stuff ain't doing enough. And I'm standing there, and a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Try these." He gave me some pills. Now, I don't remember saying to him, "What are those? Will they bother me if I take them?" God, thank God they weren't X-Lax. That's all I can tell you. We could have a whole new 12-step program called Laxatives Anonymous working. I could be standing here tonight as an adult child of a laxative taker. I would have been functional, but Mother sat on the toilet all the time when I was little. I hear stuff stupider than that in AA. You seem to be getting it coming from all kinds of places, all this psychobabble that floats in and out of here. Works, all I can tell you. I'm sitting on the same street corner on a furlough from another reform school a couple of years later. I'm eating these pellets and drinking this wine, and I don't know whether it's doing it or whether it ain't doing it. I know it ain't enough. It ain't never been enough. And a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm and ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. I live out in the streets. I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy everything that comes in contact with me. I'm like a plague. I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, I'm self-serving. I got an ego bigger than this whole room. I'm a taker, so therefore I'm a loser. I spent my entire lifetime before I got to you good people without ever a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lived upon the face of this earth. I was concerned about you. I was only concerned about me. If you had something I wanted, then I took it. I was only interested in you as long as you had something I wanted. And the minute I got whatever it is that you had that I wanted, I was no longer interested in you, and I didn't give a damn what happened to you. That's the way I lived my entire life. I lived my entire lifetime before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous without the knowledge of every one time in my life ever saying to any other human being, "I love you." I never used that word before I came here because takers do not use words like that. Takers don't love. Takers take. Users don't love. Users use. If I told you I loved you, you had an edge. And takers don't give people edges. Takers keep the edge. So I never said that. And if you live that way for any period of time, you'll end up like I ended up 33, 34 years ago, crawling around that cell in solitary confinement in that penitentiary without anybody sending you penny postcards anymore, because I used them all up. There wasn't anybody left. There was nobody to come and see me. Nobody to send me penny postcards. Even Mom quit coming. I'm going to tell you, when Mom quits coming, you in deep pucky, baby. Mom's always the last ones to go. She quit. They wouldn't come and see me no more. 1951, on my way to the penitentiary, what really knocked the wheels out of me, I'm standing in the old Los Angeles County Jail on my way to the penitentiary. My mother screams at me through the vision screen, "I'm a murderer." My 17-year-old brother had gotten into some of my poison and taken an overdose of it and died. You know, as I stand here before you tonight, I can still see that scene. I have never been able to get that scene out of my mind. I remember standing out there underneath that tree, handcuffed between two detectives, while they buried the only thing in the world I cared anything about, my baby brother. And I got all the guilt and shame and humiliation and degradation of a lifetime hanging around my shoulders. They won't even let me stand near the family. And I don't think the family wants me standing near them anyhow. They're looking at me with that look that they've got when they look at you like you're a scumbag. That's what you are. Look what you've done now. I still see that thing. One of the great blessings in my life is that my lovely wife and I make sure that we go out there every Christmas and take care of that grave. And it gets easier every year that I go do that. That hasn't gone away, but I'm going to tell you something. You can live with a lot of things, sobriety. Some things you never are completely free from, but you can live with them. And so you got a little, some of those things hanging down there you don't know how to do with it. You can live with it if you get busy trying to do something for somebody else. Makes it easier to live with things you can't do anything about. I didn't know that. I didn't know that when I came out of that penitentiary 4.5 years later trying to prove what a psychiatrist told me wasn't true. He said people like me didn't change. I believed him. He said I was doomed to die in an institution. I believed him. He took me down and showed me little green rooms. You're going to end up here, hot shot. And I told him, not me. I'm different. The theme song of the alcoholic. You know, I'm different. Like I'm walked out of the institution, bounty terminal. I had that deal beaten. 6 months later, I'm laying in the nut house, kicking and screaming, and that's when I made my round of some of the better laughing academies in the country, interviewing psychiatrists. I used to talk to them with my wraparound overcoat on. We had meaningful conversation. They talked to me about my mother. I talked to them about their mother. And he's just... They really get nervous when you interview them. Do you know that? Have you ever tried to psychoanalyze a psychiatrist? You want to drive one crazy? I'm going to drive a psychiatrist. Next time you're locked up one of them nut houses, some of us may be there again. Who knows? I'll tell you how to really make them smoke their pipe. Lay up with your roommate, and both of you memorize the same dream to tell him the next day. Really? And what I hope and pray to God is my last interview with a psychiatrist. I hope and pray to God it is. Happened to me in a federal government hospital in Fort Worth, Texas. If I live to be 1,000 years old, I'll never forget that day. Because I'm through. Now, I don't even know I'm through, but I'm through. I can't go on no more. I'm sick and tired of me. I can't get rid of the nightmares anymore. I can't turn away the faces of the things I've done. I can't do nothing anymore. Everything I'm ingesting into my system doesn't seem to do it anymore. Maybe for a little while, but not very long. Because I'm conscious longer than I'm unconscious anymore. I'm there more than I'm not there anymore. It's really getting to be a terrible walk in hell. I don't know what to do about it. And I remember moving in and sitting down on this man's desk. I remember looking across the room at his desk, up against the wall of his office. And I remember seeing all of his plaques and his diplomas and his degrees. And I thought to myself, just for an instant, maybe he knows. Maybe this is where the journey ends. Man, I'm tired. Maybe this is where... There was a flicker of hope that came into me, probably the only one I'd had for a long time. A flicker of hope. Maybe this is the way out. Maybe this is the end of it. I don't know. But when the doctor sat down at his desk and started to talk to me, when he opened his mouth, every little bit of hope I had, he threw clean out the window. He looked at me and he said, Johnny, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problem. When I was a kid in the Hutchinson State Reform School, my counselor told me if I didn't drink, I'd be all right. When I was in juvenile hall in Los Angeles, my counselor told me if I didn't drink, I'd be all right. When I was in the Whittier State Reform School, my counselor told me if I didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, I'd be all right. They told me that in San Quentin. They told me that in Folsom. They told me that in Lexington. They told me that in Fort Worth. They told me that everywhere I went. And what none of those people ever took into consideration, that every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am right now. As physically sober. How many times I wanted to scream out at them, good God, doctor, don't you understand? Because they don't. I'm sorry. They don't understand. The only people who understand me are people like you. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous works, you understand? Because one alcoholic talks to another alcoholic. And if you haven't got the disease of alcoholism, you'll never understand me. And if you haven't got the disease of alcoholism, I'll never understand you. You won't understand why I drink, and I won't understand why you don't. It's that simple. I don't understand how these people can put up with some of this crap for all these years when relief is just a swallow away. I mean, Jesus, Why would you do it? I'll tell you why. Because when they drink it, it don't do for them what it does for me. It doesn't do what my lovely wife said this afternoon. What my sponsor, dear sponsor, said. It doesn't change their perception to reality. It just doesn't do it. How would you like to be out there? Clancy said it very well. How'd you like to be out there when all hell is breaking loose, man? The bill collectors are after you. The wife is chasing you with the blue paper. Everybody's begging at your throat. And you take a drink. And nothing happens. No thanks. The thing that kills more alcoholics, I suppose, than any other thing in the world is alcoholics always know how well it works and what it does. They know that relief is just a swallow away. That's what drives alcoholics like me back to the bar time and time and time and time again. I left that hospital that day, took a Greyhound bus, went back to Los Angeles to die, and a little over 33 years ago, they tied me down to bed in the Los Angeles County Jail, more dead than alive. I was the color of those chairs. I weighed 128 pounds, and there was a doctor standing there telling me I was going to die. He came into my room 3 days in a row, and I laid there, and he told me I was going to die. He said, son, you're going to die, nothing we can do for you. And the third day he came into my room, I had this terror grip me that I've never known before since. The idea came to me I was going to live and not die. I was going to get up out of the bed, go to the penitentiary, and come back out and start that rat race all over again. I didn't want to do that. I laid in that bed for 18 days and 18 nights. I didn't eat, sleep, drink, or do anything. And one night, because I knew nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer I ever said in my life. I said, oh, God, help me. I thought for a long, long time nothing had happened. There were no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, we got an A meeting down there. I get up and wander off into the tulip somewhere. I just went to sleep for a little while. And I don't know how many of you ever kicked a two-year heroin habit, but that's what I was doing. That's the first time I'd been asleep in a long, long time. I'll tell you how sick I was. 2 weeks later, I'm up running around the jail looking for some more of the poison to put me back on the bed I'd just gotten off of. There's a very good reason for that. In the back of my mind, where my problem seems to be centered, was the knowledge that when I can't stand life on life terms any longer, I can ingest something into my system and I'm okay right now. And right now is all I ever wanted to be. I never wanted to be all right the day after tomorrow. I wanted to be all right now. Downtown, my old sponsor used to say, and get me downtown right now. Well, that's the Alcoholics theme song, ain't it? Let's get it on now so we can enjoy it now. Hell with tomorrow. Tomorrow, we'll take care of tomorrow. What was a great little saying that gal in Gone with the Wind used to say, oh, I'll worry about that tomorrow. That gal may have been an alky. We didn't know that. You know that? You know, years later in Alcoholics Anonymous, I used to run around with an old man by the name of Chuck Chamberlain, who was very dear to me and very close. He was like a father to me. And Papa used to talk a great deal about surrender. He'd say it all the time, surrender! You know, God, the room would shake when he'd say it. Just, people would cringe and jump under chairs and stuff. And one night he was on one of these big tangents in a meeting I was at. He was surrendering everybody. You know what I mean? God, they were spilling coffee and doing stuff. We were going home from the thing, and I don't know how you were when you knew, but I was always questioning these people about things. You know, I was inquisitive. What I was really trying to do was trap them, but I was inquisitive. And I said to him, Papa, I want to ask you a question. He said, what do you want to know, son? I said, didn't I surrender on my deathbed in the Los Angeles County Jail with a desperation and a deepness as much as you did on your kitchen floor in Beverly Hills? He says, yes, you did. Why? No doubt about it in my mind. Why not? Why? What do you want to know? I said, then how come I got loaded 2 weeks later and you never did? He said, well, that's very simple, son. You have to surrender every day. See how they are around here? These simple questions and answers for you, just deep. You can't figure them things out. But it's just simple things like every day. Why? Got to do something all the time for God's sake? Wait a minute. I just want to do it once and coast. I stood in front of a Superior Court judge, and the judge called me a blood-sucking parasite in society. He told me I had no right being around decent people. He told a woman who was sitting in the courtroom who was pregnant with my child, if she cared anything about her child, I could never be allowed to lay eyes on it. What that man said to me that day literally drove me insane. For this good reason. the one thing I have never been able to do in my entire lifetime, before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, since I've been here or from this day forward, I can't hide me from me. I can hide me from you. I'm excellent at it. As a matter of fact, I'm a master at hiding me from you. I do it in all various sorts of ways. I'm a master. I keep you away by bad-mouthing you or anger or my dress or my uniform of the day or whatever. I can keep you away from me and let you see only so much. But I have never been able to hide me from me. I've always known what kind of a scum I was. I've always known what kind of a thing I was. I always knew what kind of a rock I crawled out from under, because when I'm sober, I got the evidence. Sitting right there, the evidence of what kind of a scumbag I am. Now that I'm sober, I can't blame alcohol or drug for that. I did that. Alcohol wasn't out there doing that and committing mayhem. I was. I was the culprit. I can't blame alcohol for it or alcoholism for that. I'm the thing that did that. Alcohol was the only thing that made it bearable for me to live with the knowledge of what I did when I was out there. That's all. So when that man told me that day in that courtroom what I was, my brain could no longer stand it, which is what happens to alcoholics who don't drink, who find no way of recovery. Their brain explodes or they blow their brains out. And my brain exploded. It was the only protection I had left. I spent the next 9 months of my life drifting in and out of insanity in this cell in solitary confinement. And on the fourth day of November 1959, I wandered in and sat down in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to get sober. I was as physically sober when I came to you good people as I am right now. Matter of fact, if I'd have known where I was coming, I probably wouldn't even have come. I was an alcoholic. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. Nobody was sitting around telling me, you're an alcoholic. They said, you're a thief. Oh, I was many things to those people, but I was not an alcoholic. The reason I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous is because the institution I was in let women come in there. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous over 31 and a half years ago to smell perfume. Now, I've been honking and sniffing around here ever since. I mean, you open up the door, some of us been fenders coming in. One of us might even stay. You can't tell. I remember moving in and sitting down in the back row in what I lovingly like to call my throne of contempt. Had my coat collar up and my shades on because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have froze to death, for God's sake. Remember looking up on the backboard, I saw two brigades, and I thought to myself, my God, I wandered into an anti-aircraft brigade. I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. I said, what is this? He says, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. I sunk down in my seat. Gangsters weren't supposed to be hanging out with them winos. Then Gangsters Anonymous or Over-Hip Anonymous or Dope Fiends Anonymous. Man, you can get into that dope fiend business, you know that? Makes addicts seem kind of candy-ass, don't it? You know what I mean? Dope fiends, man, you can get it on, you know, woo! Couldn't be bad, be bad. Smell bad, act bad, tear him up. Be a candy ass. My old sponsor used to have to say, listen, it's saying, old Norm used to have a hell of a saying, don't give up because you puke a little bit, for God's sakes. Hang in there. Hang in there. Give them hell, all of it. Don't lie in there. I tell you the sad part about that, we can't help you till you do. We cannot help you till you do it. That's simple. I didn't know that. I thought, well, I'll wait for these women to tell their racist story. You got to remember, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there weren't very many pretty young ladies like my wife at Alcoholics Anonymous. These old gals got up to talk that day and said they drank for a long time. You could look at them and know they'd been somewhere for a long time. When they said, I used to drink, I said, I'll bet you did. Bad stuff, too. I knew everything when I came here. I was a walking encyclopedia of useless information when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew so damn much what wasn't true, I didn't know what was true. There's a principle in a paragraph in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, that I love that will describe me to you when I sit in my first meeting. Better than anything I could ever say. It says, there's a principle which is a boon to man. It's bound to keep you in everlasting ignorance. That's the principle of contempt prior to investigation. And I was so frightened of failing all my life before I got to you good people, I never tried nothing. I was so frightened of failing. I wanted to be many things before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was so frightened of failing, I didn't try anything. I just sat around and said, it won't work for me. I'm different. I won't work for me. I'm not going to do it. This works fine. It's the way I live my lifetime. Never in my life, have I ever been more confused than I was when I sit in my early meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. You people confuse me more than anything that I know of. I sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous back there, and you say things from podiums like this, good, well-meaning things. You say, I used to drink, now I don't drink anymore, and everything is wonderful. I say, I guess I'm not alcoholic then. I'm not drinking either, and I'm crazy. I used to say, I wish I was alcoholic. If I could just be alcoholic, then all I'd have to do is not drink. I said, but there's something far more wrong with me than that. They say, you got to get busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I run around like a chick with my head cut off. I picked up ashtrays, poured coffee, smiled at them. Went back and set an inventory point and died. I'm doing what you told me to do, and I'm crazy. I don't know what to do. And I'm in a lot of trouble. I'm desperate. And every time I went up to ask somebody, I said something, what is it? They said, Johnny, it's in the book. I said, well, what's in the book? They said, oh, it's there. You go look for it. You'll find it. Man, I've made a fantastic discovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. You want to hide anything from an alcoholic? Put it in the book. They don't look there. They look everywhere else. Clancy said, he told me the other day, if Charlotte wants to hide money from me, she puts it in his book. Don't tell Clancy I said that, Debbie. Not because I'm any intellectual giant, because I'm not. Not because I'm any smart individual, because I'm not, but because I'm a defiant, arrogant, different, selfish, egotistical alcoholic. I decided one day, with my arrogance and my defiance, that I was going to show you. I'm going to work your program of recovery and prove to you it won't work. That's how I'm going to prove it to you. I'm different, and I'm going to prove to you my difference. And about 31 years ago right now, sitting in a room with a man in a penitentiary a long, long time ago, doing what our program of recovery calls the fifth step, the greatest single event that ever happened to me in my entire lifetime happened to me that day. Somewhere sitting in that room with that man that day, I heard myself say to this man that I was an alcoholic. From way down deep inside of me, there came a freedom that I carry with me to this very instant. I stand before you tonight, I'm an alcoholic. I know exactly what's wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic. I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I'm not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something, I couldn't have your program. And the reason I couldn't have it is I just separated me from you. That's all. I was either better than you or worse than you, smarter than you or dumber than you, richer than you or poorer than you. But I was not like you. I did not have to work your program. I didn't have to quite do it the way you did it. You may have to do it that way, but you're alcoholic. I'm alcoholic, and I don't have to quite do it that way. See, when I became an alcoholic, just like the rest of the alcoholics, I had to try to live by the program of recovery. The only program of recovery for an alcoholic in 5,000 years of recorded history. It's a program of recovery that's outlined in a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what I had to do. And when I started to do things like that, and when I swallowed that little piece of truth about myself and became just like you, and have to do the things that you have to do, then I could have this program of recovery. And then the things started to happen to me. Then they started to come. Then the people started to come into my life who were more concerned with saving my life and they weren't hurting my feelings. Prior to that, I wasn't ready to hear them. I was too defiant. I was too different. I wasn't not like them. I didn't want to be here. I didn't want to do this. I want to do it my way. And my way don't work, but I'll do it anyhow. But until that moment of surrender, I guess, it's this moment of surrender, that I heard myself admit to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic, which it says in the third chapter of our book, from that moment of surrender to this, I have been willing to do whatever the people of Alcoholics Anonymous asked me to do, particularly my sponsor. I have people who are more concerned in my life, thank God, with saving my life and they aren't hurting my feelings. The first ones were a bunch of people who didn't like my language. It consisted of about four-letter words, but that didn't mean anything. Everybody talked like that where I came from. They told me things like cussing was a crutch for a conversational cripple. Then they stood my wrath when I rained on them. A On June the 4th, 1961, the state of California turned me loose into a world I didn't know anything about. The only thing I was armed with was a program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous. And the only dream I had in the last 19 months I was in that institution was that you would allow me to come and sit in your meetings with you. That's all. I said to myself time and time and time again as I went to bed night after night after night, man, if they'll only let me come and sit in their meetings with them, I'll do anything they ask me to do. I came out of that penitentiary. I went home to see my mother. My mother fell off the step blind drunk. I picked her up and put her on the couch and said, Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting. She said, fine, I think you should. Mom's still drinking. I've learned a fantastic lesson from my mother, probably the greatest lesson I know, that I do not have the power to get anybody sober. I don't have the power to get them drunk either. Where would I get any power? Where would any of us get any power, for God's sakes? I came to Alcoholics Anonymous powerless. I remain powerless. I'm given in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous one very little simple thing. I'm given a daily reprieve contingent upon my maintenance of certain spiritual condition. Jerry talked about it being awakened spiritually. That's what happens to us here. The first thing we got to do, we got to dig off the garbage that's covering up the spirit. And the spirit has to flow. There's a spirit that permeates the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's permeated by the people who went before us and have done this thing and left this spirit for us to pick up and walk. That's all. And you can't have that spirit if it's buried under a pile of garbage. God don't shine through a pile of garbage. God's bucking to get out of there. You know the most fantastic thing that's ever happened to me in my life? The most fantastic thing that's ever happened to me in my life, when I was a little boy, my grandmother used to talk to me about a God who punished little boys who were bad. When I was a little boy. Organized theology takes God and puts him over there somewhere. Sets him up there on some type of a throne. He's so far away, he's unreachable. Alcoholics Anonymous took God down off that throne and put him right in here where he belongs. And wherever I am, he is. And wherever you are, he is. The greatest thing that's ever happened to me in my life in Alcoholics Anonymous happens to me from time to time sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Something happens to me when I'm with you that happens to me nowhere else upon the face of this earth. Nowhere. I sat in this meeting last night and heard Jerry talk. I sat in the meeting this afternoon and heard Debbie talk. I heard Pat and Peggy and Dick talk. And I sit there and sit there and sit there. And while I was sitting in that meeting listening to these people talk, I was more concerned about their well-being than I was my own. And in that moment of eternity, I'm closer to my God than I'm ever going to be. I'm closer to my God than I'm ever going to be when I'm out there trying to give this thing away just for free and for fun. When I'm sharing me with another alcoholic, I'm emptying myself of myself. And as Papa taught me a long, long time ago, when I empty myself of self, I'm automatically full of God. That's why people like me who come to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and sit and listen and become attuned to what's going on in the meeting and to the feeling of the meeting, become more concerned about the people around them than they are themselves. I was taught that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was taught that by my sponsor. I didn't know. I thought he hated me. I thought he hated me when he yelled at me, told me to shut up when I'm sitting in meetings. He wouldn't let me get up and wander around in meetings. He said, sit still. I said, what if I wet my pants? He said, so what? Sit still and shut up. God, he was cruel to me. You know the cruelest thing he ever did to me in my life? A hot July night it was. God, it was hot. Hot. I said, Norm, you going to come and get me to a meeting? He says, yeah. Be there, get you 6:30. Fine. I'm standing on the street corner. I got my new tank top on and my shorts and my thong, and I'm ready. He drove up, took one look at me, and drove off. I've never been so humiliated in my life. I was angry. Man, I was angry. I couldn't wait. 11 o'clock at night, that phone jumped off the hook at Monrovia. What are you doing? I said to him. He said, what do you mean? I said, why do you humiliate me all the time? He says, you really want to know? I said, yeah. I said, you treat me like an idiot. He says, you are an idiot. I said, what do you mean by running off and leaving me standing on the street corner like this? He said, would you go to church dressed like that? I said, no, I wouldn't. He says, you ain't going to my church dressed like that either. I said, how come you yell at me in meetings and tell me to shut up? He said, make me sit still. He said, Johnny, if you want to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and you don't want to listen, that's your business. That's your business. He said, but you ever stop to think that maybe the person sitting next to you does? Have you ever one moment in your life ever given a thought to the guy sitting next to you in an AA meeting? No, I hadn't. Have you ever stopped to think when you get up and stumble over somebody because you can't wait 3 seconds to have a cup of coffee? That the person sitting next to you may be in a thought process that will save his life? And if you don't want to hear, that's fine, but you ever stop to think that maybe the guy said, no, I haven't, I said. He said, I didn't think so. He said, selfish, self-centered people like you don't ever think of people like that. All you think about is your own comfort and your own well-being, and if they know you're around, if you're to be heard, if you can be seen, that's all you ever thought about. Man, it's true. That's all I ever thought about. So now I go sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I listen to everything said in meetings. I listen from the time they send us into serenity prayer until the time they say the Our Father. And I sit there and listen, not because I'm such a fantastic, wonderful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not at all. It's because I don't want to miss that one little word or that one little phrase or that one little sentence or that one little paragraph that may save my life somewhere down the road when I need it. That's all. So I'm still selfish and I'm still self-centered and I'm still self-serving. But by sitting here and trying to listen and find out the message that's for me, I'm taking some consideration for the guy sitting next to me. And over a period of time, I become less selfish and less self-centered and more concerned about you. I'm more that way here than I am everywhere else. That's really true. I'm more considerate of you than I am anywhere else because I seem to understand that an alcoholic who doesn't get this message is going to die drunk. And I don't want to be tagged with that at all. You don't want to get sober. That isn't any of my business. You don't want to sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and want to listen. If you want to keep your defiance, you want to be this and you want to do it your way, that's fine with me. That's fine. You don't have to. I do. You see, it's a matter of life and death, and it's my life. It's my life. I'm going to live this way. And the reason I'm going to live this way is because the people who went before me proved to me that it's much better than anything that I know of. My sponsor, Norm Alpe, for 22 years, made me believe one thing by teaching me all those things, that there wasn't a damn thing special about me just because I come and put my butt in a chair in Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing at all. So I don't have any special dispensation from God because I come in here and occupy space in an AA meeting. That there ain't anything special about me at all. He says, as a matter of fact, Johnny, you ought to be just about a cut or two above everybody else around you because you're supposed to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're supposed to have a program of recovery. You're supposed to do these things. I'd like to be able to stand here and tell you that ever since I've been sober, I've been a shining example. I've never done anything wrong. I've never done anything I've been guilty about or shaky about. I've never got myself in any kind of situation that I wasn't guilty or ashamed or paid for. That's not true. I'm a human being. I can tell you this, that since I've been sober, all the time that I've been sober, the only thing that separated me from you is me. The only thing that's ever driven me in any kind of problems at all has been my selfishness and my self-centeredness. I want, I need, I gotta have, I, me, me, me. That's all I ever know. I remember one time I used to ride around with Chuck, and Chuck used to talk a great deal about a lot of things. And I never said anything intelligent enough to him to get his attention. Matter of fact, every time I said anything to him, it was always wrong. Because he intimidated me, and he was such a magnificent man, you who knew him. He just, when he walked into the room went, and I'd walk right behind him going. When I was always trying to, you ever been around your sponsor or somebody who just, you know, he's like my dad, man. I'm always trying to impress my papa. You know what I mean? I'm always trying to say something to him. Every time I said it wrong. He said, that's not the way I said it, Johnny. Oh, God. So one night I was at a literature table, and I stole something off a literature table. I knew this was wonderful because I read it, and I got so puffed up I thought I was, yeah, man, look at here. So I'm going to read it to Papa. We're riding down the street. I said, listen to this, Papa. This is wonderful. He said, go ahead, son, read it. He said, why we were chosen. He said, hold it. I said, what do you mean? He said, we ain't chosen. I said, it says right here. He said, I don't care what that says. He said, Johnny, we're all God's kids. All of us are. If I am, you are. And if you are, I am. I looked at him. Kind of stupid, I felt. He said, he makes the rain to fall on the just as well as the unjust. Isn't that true? Sun shines for everybody, doesn't it? I said, Papa, how come I'm sober then? I want to know why am I sober. I know people who are far better people than I'll ever be who aren't sober, who will never be sober. My mother, my little mother, is a far better person than I'll ever be. And my little mother can't stay sober. Why is that, Papa? He said, that's very simple, son. You've come to understand you're one of God's kids and you act like it. And so when you act like one of God's children, he treats you like one of his children. That's really true. When my kids act like my kids, I treat them like my kids. That's really true. When my two daughters act like my daughters, I treat them like my daughters. When they act like somebody else's kids, I let somebody else treat them like their kids. That's very simple. True. I learned a great lesson. That's true. I learned that my children do not come from me, they come through me, that they're God's kids too. And I'm not responsible for anybody else's actions. I'm only responsible for my own. How do God's kids act? What do God's kids do? Where do you get the blueprint to act like one of God's kids? I don't know. I tell you, if I act like one of God's kids, it's because it's the people that I tried to copy or imitate since I came here. I know God's children go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're concerned about the people sitting next to them. I do know God's kids act like that. I do know God's kids act and dress and behave in such a way that they're proud to be God's kids. I do know that. I do know God's kids can live through any type of catastrophe as long as they keep coming to these meetings and doing what they're asked to do. I do know that. I can do it through suicides. I can do it through divorces. I can do it through bankruptcies. I can do it through business failures. I can do it through anything. As long as I keep coming to these meetings and doing what you ask me to do, I can do it. And why? Because I had three of the greatest gentlemen who ever lived in this world lead me down this path of alcoholism into Alcoholics Anonymous. Norm Alpe and Chuck Chamberlain, and now my current sponsor, Clancy. I want to tell you something. Everybody thinks Clancy's such a dictator. Clancy is a pussycat compared to Norm Alpe, I'll tell you that. Norm Alpe yelled at me. He wouldn't give an inch. Clancy bends every once in a while. Don't you tell Clancy I said that either. But that's true. And I love them all equally. I was trying to tell somebody the consistency that's been in my life. When I came out of the penitentiary in 1961, Norm said to me, how long have you been sober, hotshot? And I said, 19 months, Norm. He said, no, you haven't. I said, what do you mean? He said, this is the day you start your sobriety. I said, what do you mean? He says, in there ain't out here. Okay. Okay. Made me stand up as a newcomer and wave. Secretly, I knew how long I'd been sober. What a wise man he was. What a wise man. You see, I was not equipped egotistically. I was too selfish and self-centered to know anything about being with you. That's why I had to learn how to act in meeting. I had to apply the traditions to my life so I'll understand how I'm supposed to act around you. Norm Alpe knew that. 23 years later, when I sit down in a room with Clancy and asked Clancy to be my sponsor, the first thing Clancy said to me was, you don't count your time from the time you were locked up, do you, Johnny? I said, no, I don't, Clancy. I take my birthday case on the 4th day of June, 1961. He said, good. In there ain't out here. 23 years later, two men spoke the same language. Now, why would that be so? Because two men tried to live by the principles of this program of Alcoholics Anonymous and give it away for free and for fun to anybody that wants it. Their telephone was always answered the same way my telephone is answered today. If the date's open, it belongs to you. You don't realize how simple that will make your life. If the date's open, it belongs to whoever wants me, because I belong to you. That takes care of Christmas, the 4th of July, holidays, Thanksgiving, birthdays, even my anniversary. Sorry, Deb, but that's the way it works sometimes. And I'm going to tell you, my life today is absolutely fantastic. It's a fairy tale, really. I'm married to a lovely lady who is probably one of the finest AA members that I know of. And I don't say that just because she's sitting in this audience. I sit and watch her. And I'm her greatest critic. I'm her husband. I see her when you don't see her. And that seems to be the measure. I watch her work with newcomers. I see these kind of things. I know she's the greatest member of Alcoholics Anonymous woman that I know of in my area. I watch her work with these newcomers. Not just because she's sitting there. It's true. If it wasn't, I'd tell you so. And I love her for that reason, and for that reason a great deal. I probably love her more than any woman that I know of. I heard Dick say that today. Sounds neat. I give him credit for it twice more, and then it's mine. Yes. It's true. This program works if you work it. It doesn't work if you don't work it. See, I don't know a lot about a lot of things. I really don't. I don't know how to do a whole lot of things. I really don't. I'm not one of them intellectual giants. I never studied and got a bunch of degrees and learned all that kind of thing. Matter of fact, I destroyed most of my brain out there before I got to you good people. I do know one simple little thing. I do know that I can do what this program of Alcoholics Anonymous asked me to do. And when I do that, I don't have to drink. And I don't want to drink anymore. Not because I'm afraid of drinking or because I'm afraid of going to jail. I don't ever want to have to hurt anybody anymore the way I used to have to hurt people. I never want to stand outside of a gravesite anymore and watch the only thing I love in the world be buried and I put in that grave. I don't ever want to live that way anymore. That's what scares me. I don't want to be that thing no more. And the only thing that I know that if I do what this program of Alcoholics Anonymous asked me to do, I don't have to live that way anymore. I don't have to think about drinking. I don't have to think about it at all. People say you got to think to drink. No, you don't. All you got to do is quit doing what this program tells you what to do. And if you're an alcoholic, you'll wake up drunk. Alcoholics drink. That's what they do. They got to have something that replaces the drink. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and my love for you great people has filled up that tremendous void in my life that I had all my life before I got to you. That boy. The guy that I love who come from this area used to have a little thing. He gave me a little saying I love. It's probably the greatest piece of truth that I know of. Sad part about it, after 9 years of sobriety, he forgot the saying himself and he went out there because people like us who we forget were condemned to relive. Another guy that I loved a great deal knew that I loved this thing, so he got me a plaque made of it, and it hangs over the door of our place. We get to see it when we leave the door. And the little saying is this: if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. I know that's a little deep for Springfield, but just try to hang on to it. That's about as heavy as I get, folks, I'm telling you. If you missed it, you've missed it. That means what it says. There's no psychological hidden evaluation in there. Whoa. That means if you're sitting in this room or in the smoking room or somewhere and there's a football in your gut and you're restless and you're irritable and you're discontent and you don't want to be here, then you just keep on doing what you're doing. You're going to keep on getting what you're getting. Chuck said it like this: you can't think your way into right living. You got to live your way into right thinking. That's what that means. There's a chapter in our book that says into action. There isn't one in there that says into thinking. I know. I look for it. But that saying also means this: that if you're sitting in this room and you've heard what I've heard this weekend, You've heard people stand here and talk about the peace and the happiness and the joy that this program of recovery has given them. How they've come to be reunited to the God of their very own and live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. If you walk in peace and live in peace, then you should keep on doing what you're doing, because you're sure going to keep on getting what you're getting. I don't know about another living soul who lives upon the face of this earth. It's not up to me. I don't live inside of anybody else's skin. I can't look inside of you and see what's going on. I can only tell you this for me and only for me. I'm going to keep on doing what I've been doing, because I sure do like what I've been getting. God bless you.